there's no reason for mom shaming and blaming. We as women, I think, can really lift each other up by being vulnerable and sharing our truth and having compassion for somebody who's going through a tough time. And realizing that when we share our stories, we're healing each other.
Hi, I'm Sylvia Beckerman. Join me today as I talk to an extraordinary woman who is changing the world by making a difference in her life and the lives of those around her.
My name is Anne Batchelder, and I've written a memoir called Craving Spring. Welcome to Sylvia and Me.
Anne, I am so delighted to have you here today with me, because it's not just that you wrote a book called Craving Spring. Let's give the whole title of the book. Sure. Craving Spring, A Mother's Quest, A Daughter's Depression, and the Greek Myth That Brought Them Together. It's about you and your daughter's journey, her journey with mental health and addiction, and your journey as a mother,
right,
in realizing that you need to ask for help.
Mm-hmm.
As mothers, we think we're supposed to do it all. Women are brought up to protect their young, their cubs. We're supposed to be the ones who are able to protect them from harm, harm from anything around them and harm from within themselves. And I'd like to just read something that I poached off your website.
Okay.
It says, "The day my teenage daughter announced she had suicidal thoughts was the beginning of the end. The end of me thinking I could protect her from suffering and the end of assuming I knew what the hell I was doing as a mother. Those dark years between mothering a young child and guiding an adult daughter were like navigating a sailboat through a hurricane. The seas turbulent, the foreboding winds merciless." Your daughter, I believe, while she was in high school, came to you and told you she not only had an eating disorder, but she had suicidal thoughts.
Right.
Something that, as a mother, you start questioning yourself, what did I do? How did I not notice this?
Exactly.
Well, what did you do once you found this out, once she told you? I mean, with everything, with
no idea that she was so depressed and thought of killing herself or running. What she said was, "I wanted to run my car into a tree." And so I was shocked. I was just reeling. I kept thinking, how could this happen? Everything seemed to be going well. I thought we were fine as a family. I thought everything was going smoothly. She was getting good grades in school. She was, you know, finding her way. And we had a good relationship, all those things. And it just sent me over the edge. I didn't know what to do. So my whole world turned upside down in like a moment. And of course, like you said, I went to the internet and started researching what the heck happened. And then I started thinking, how did this happen? I started in the middle of the night, trying to unravel, you know, where did this happen? How did this happen? How did I allow this to happen? And I think as a mother with, you know, growing up in the 50s and 60s, as I did, you know, mothers were expected to be not only responsible for their little children, but they're responsible for their children throughout their lives. Anytime their kids did something wrong, it was your fault. And so, of course, I went to blaming myself. And the thing was, I went into high gear. I found her a therapist. We, you know, worked through a lot of her issues in high school, and she seemed to be getting better. So I thought, okay, well, this bump in the road is over. We're good. And I really didn't understand depression or addiction or eating disorder very well at that point. There wasn't a lot of resources like there are today at that point. And also back then, eating disorder was kind of considered separate from addiction. There was not an understanding of some of the core issues. It was all about the substance. Well, fix the food issue and everything will be fine, or fix the drugs and alcohol and everything will be fine. And I knew that wasn't really going to happen, but I was hoping that we had, you know, gone through that well, and she would be on her way and off to college soon, and everything would be fine.
And so, the thing is that addiction is something that really we all have in some sort.
Exactly.
An eating disorder is one of the top killers of young women, yes, next to fentanyl and opioid addiction. And it is a part of a mental health disorder.
Right, exactly.
And so, you know, we can go and try to find cures, but an addiction really can't be cured. It has to be dealt with.
Not by a mother, that's for sure.
Definitely not by a mother.
But so, I believe that because I blamed myself in a lot of ways because I didn't know what else to do. And because I accepted that, I also assumed that if I was powerful enough to cause this problem, then I was powerful enough to cure it. And that was my thinking along that line. And so I went into high gear, the mama bear, trying to make sure I dropped everything I was doing. I dropped any kind of work I was doing and just focused on getting her well. And it was important. At the time, it was necessary. It was, she needed help and I was there. But there were a lot of things I didn't understand.
We'll get into that because I believe going through what you went through and then further on, because you did find a therapist, one I know you say shouldn't really not be doing therapy on the eating disorder, and basically had you monitoring your daughter. And then she goes off to college and you're thinking that everything is great. You know, anyone with an eating disorder or an addiction, you know, once they get to a certain level, they within themselves believe they're fine. Mm-hmm. But then there was a slip into something else.
Yeah.
Where she called you and she told you what?
Well, she didn't necessarily call me. She went to college and was having trouble figuring out how to fit in there and got involved with a lot of kids who were doing drugs. And she, her grades started slipping. We didn't understand what was happening. We kept thinking, oh, she's having trouble adjusting. We'll go see what's going on. And at one point, after about a year, year and a half, she called and said, I need to come home. This isn't working for me. And we said, okay, if that's what you need to do, you can go to the university here and you can come home and live on campus or whatever. And that, you know, we were okay with that. That didn't quite work out as well as we thought it would. She was still struggling. And one day, the following summer, she invited me to come to a therapy session with her. And I thought, oh, great, we're finally going to get to the bottom of what's going on. What does she need from me? How can we fix whatever's happening? And that's when she said, I have to tell you something. When I was in college, when I was in Charleston in college, I was addicted to heroin. And I thought I was going to fall off the chair. I didn't know what to think. And at that point, I said to my husband, we have to go to a addiction couples therapist. We have to get on the same page about this. We only have a couple of more years of any kind of leverage with her where we can encourage her to do something healthy for herself. And so we did, but before we got very far, she came up against some other problems and it was clear that she needed to go to rehab. So she agreed to go to rehab at that point.
And, okay.
Yeah.
As a mom, you're still trying to fix her.
Oh, yeah.
And as a mom, you're still trying to figure out, what did I do wrong?
Right.
How could this happen to my daughter? And the utter guilt that any mom, as we do, go through.
Oh, and I still, at that point, I still also was like, okay, if she has to go to rehab, it'll be quick. It'll be a month. We, you know, we'll figure it out and then it'll be all right, you know, and it wasn't. And she stayed longer than a month. And I, at that point, I decided to go into a 12-step Al-Anon program myself because I didn't want her to think she was the only sick person in the family. I wanted to understand what she was going through. I kind of did it with the idea of, oh, I'm going to be really supportive and do this too. So, you know, she can feel like I'm got her back.
I want to go towards something before you go into your 12 step. You mentioned in your book, you talk about, it wasn't until I read a book by Buddhist teacher, Kevin Griffith, One Breath at a Time, Buddhism and the 12 Steps. Mm-hmm. Recovery is not about trying to fix something broken, he explains. Instead, it involves finding ways to tolerate that which at first seems intolerable. Mm-hmm. Addiction is part of the human condition, not something unique to those who abuse drugs or alcohol. So you go into this 12-step program. Mm-hmm. And what were you, you know, we see on TV or anyone who has been around Alcoholics Anonymous or someone with addiction and you know, the 12 steps, but you never really see, I don't think I ever have seen someone who is not the drug addict or the disordered eating disorder. Tell, what did you expect to find in this 12-step program?
Well, Al-Anon is specifically for people who have loved ones who are in addiction. The person in Al-Anon is not necessarily involved in drugs and alcohol. They're the ones who are trying to help their loved one. So I went to a group that was all parents of kids who were having addiction issues. And so I went there expecting to learn what I could do to help my daughter. And what I learned was that I had things to work on. And I had, so it's one thing to go to a meeting, and they're very helpful. That's very, but it's another thing to get a sponsor and actually work through each step. And so once I started working through each step, I realized, oh, wait a minute, this is about me. And it's not that me, I have to fix me in order to fix her. It was more about everybody is on the spectrum of addiction on some level. We all have cravings. We all want things to go the way we want them to go. We all struggle with not accepting reality as it is. And I think that reading that book that you just mentioned was after I'd gone through the 12 steps later, I read that book and I realized that in Buddhism, there is something called attachment. It's not called addiction necessarily, but we're all attached to wanting things the way we want them. And that's where suffering comes in. And that's where we get tripped up with trying to find relief for that suffering in all the wrong places. So that's when I started putting two and two together and thinking, oh, wait a minute, this is a more of a universal issue. It's not just about my daughter, and it's not just about me as a parent of a child in addiction. This is about everyone. And that's when I started unraveling, well, what are my assumptions about motherhood? What are my assumptions about women's wisdom? I was reading these how-to books, and they were all like, oh, if you want your child to be confident, do these three things. And I thought, it's not working for me. It is not working for me. And so that's when I realized that sharing stories is the way that women learn how to trust themselves. And that, you know, I didn't intend to write a memoir. I had no intention, but I write a journal. I keep a journal. And I was writing a lot in my journal because that's how I think. That's how I process. And I started taking some writing classes. And all of a sudden, the journal writing started becoming a little more descriptive. And I thought, I need to unravel, like, where did my assumptions about motherhood come from? What was going on with my mother? What was happening in my life? What's happening? How did this happen for me? Not because of my daughter, but about me and our culture and everything else. And I wanted to write the book as a sort of way of explaining to myself what had happened. And then once I got done with it, I asked my daughter if she would read it, and she did. And she said, this is great, go ahead and publish it. And that's when I decided to publish it, because I realized that if this could be helpful for me, perhaps it could be helpful for other parents or people who are going through something similar. And that's sort of
even just one, even if it helps just one person,
right?
It's a domino effect.
Exactly.
And as I said, you're writing it from a totally different perspective, mm-hmm. which so many mothers do not, they don't even think about it.
Right.
I'd like to get to it, the title of the book. The subtitle has, and the Greek myth that brought them together. Mm-hmm. And that Greek myth has to do with Demeter.
Well, I call you can call her Demeter or Demeter, either way.
Okay, Demeter.
Yeah.
A mother and her daughter,
Persephone.
Persephone. Yeah. Thank you. I didn't look it up. To find out how to pronounce it. And one of the things that you talk about is Demeter reimagined her daughter's destiny. And you talk about how once she accepted her daughter as a powerful and capable woman, a queen of her own universe, she began to see things in a new light. Mm-hmm. Did that happen with you and your daughter?
Yes, it did. And what's interesting was that back in when she was in high school, I went to a therapist who listened to me talk about how frantic I was trying to help my daughter. And she said, oh, you're just like Demeter. And I said, who? And she said, you know, the Greek myth about Demeter and Persephone. And I said, no. And she said, well, Demeter was the queen of the harvest, and she was all powerful. And she had this beautiful daughter who was a teenager and got captured by Hades and dragged to hell and disappeared. And Demeter quit all of her duties as the goddess of the harvest and went searching for her daughter as any mother would. And she kind of let herself go and let all the people starve. And all she cared about was rescuing her child. And I realized at that moment, every mother would do that, or most mothers would do that, that they would drop everything to help their kid. Of course they would. And what was so great about this myth is that if you take that story out of our century, for example, nobody was calling Demeter a helicopter mom for wanting to help her kid, right? So there was no judgment about this. In fact, everybody talks about this myth as, oh, she was such a devoted mother. She was so loving. She was this and that. And I thought, at first I thought, oh, this is great. This basically, I feel validated by my crazy, you know, trying to save my kid stuff. And it wasn't until I went back and actually read the story in depth that I realized that, oh, wait a minute, Demeter has lessons to learn. She learns how to compromise. She learns how to let go. She learns how to return to herself. And it was all these stages of a mother whose child is transitioning from being a child to being a young adult. And this is what every mother has to go through when they have a kid and the kid is growing up and going out into the world. You have to be able to trust them, and you have to be able to trust yourself as a mother. And once I started writing the book, I realized that my story had actually paralleled the myth. And that's when I wove the myth into my memoir, to show that there are important transitions that mothers make, and that it's normal and natural. And a lot of people get stuck with thinking that they have to treat their kid like they would if they were a grade school child, right? They don't let go. But what I realized was that I was so afraid of letting go of my child. I thought letting go meant just letting her suffer and letting her, you know, hit rock bottom and everything else. No, letting go was letting go of my fear. And it didn't mean I had to abandon my child. So this was really what the book's about. And it's about sharing that story so that other women can feel empowered to trust themselves, because every mother is going to do it differently, right?
Yes. Every mother's going to do it differently. And somebody suffering with any kind of mental illness or addiction, they're going to, you know, it's with you for your life. Right. And there are times when a person will slip, and there are times when that recovery will begin again.
Right.
But with any addiction, they're in recovery for the rest of their lives. It's not a question.
But we all are.
And we all are. And that's,
I mean, I slip all the time. I go back to being this codependent, whatever person, and try to give advice and try to do this and that. And I realized that that's just the nature of
human beings,
human behavior, and moving forward. There's no straight line to growth. You're going to go one step forward, two steps back. You're going to have obstacles. You're going to have to have challenges. You're going to have to start over. It's like beginner's mind. You know, you have to be open to the fact that there are joys and challenges in life all the time, and it's not going to be perfect. And the other thing I wanted to do with this book is to let go of this idea of mothers being perfect. We're not. We're going to screw up. We're human.
Exactly. Right? But we have to have the skills, and that's something else you talk about.
Right.
Instead of being a good mother, be a skilled mother. We have to learn the tools and the skills to be able to handle the ups and downs, and not go to our motherly instinct, which is blaming ourselves and being out there and be the one to come to the rescue. We're not Robin Hood. We're not, you know,
right.
We need to let them become who they're going to become.
And those skills are not found in a how-to book with three easy ways to do this. It's about practicing having clear intentions. It's about practicing being okay with your emotions and being in control of your emotions so that you're not having a knee-jerk reaction to something. It's about practicing trusting that spring follows winter, follows spring, follows winter, which is what the Demeter story is all about. It's the story of the seasons, basically.
Well,
that there's always hope. There's always, you know.
Well, that's it. And craving spring,
right?
As I've heard you say before. Well, I know I'm craving spring. You know, wintertime, we're always craving, and craving is a word that also brings up, what are we craving? You know, it's some kind of addiction. It's a yearn. It's a need. It's something.
It's not wanting things the way they are right now.
Exactly.
Right. So if you're always craving spring for your kid, you want them to have a happy, I just want them to be happy. How many mothers say that? I just want my kid to be happy. Well, maybe happiness is sort of, I don't know, unrealistic. Having them trust themselves may be a better way of thinking about it.
And just because we think they should be happy doing something doesn't mean that they're happy doing that.
Exactly.
I'll never forget the day that light bulb went on, when I kept thinking, you know, my son should, you know, my brother wanted to take him skiing, and he just didn't. He was 9 years old and he didn't want to leave then. And I kept thinking to myself, you know, how horrible, until it hit me that he is content doing what he's doing.
Right.
And that was a light bulb. And those little light bulbs could take us through life and motherhood.
Exactly.
And having that, you know, learning that skill to let go.
Right.
There's one part when you had a sponsor, her name Mary, and then you mm-hmm. became friends with her. Mm-hmm. And there's one conversation that you had, which I think kind of sums up a lot in what you're talking about. And she says to you, if you want to evolve as the mother of an adult child in recovery, you have to change your relationship to motherhood. Then you asked her what that exactly meant.
Yeah.
And she said, for starters, stop treating your daughter like a victim. Her path may not be the one you would have chosen for her, but it might be better. Now that she's past active addiction, decide that she'll be okay. Then you said, but I am already so proud of her considering all her trauma. She's my hero. Mm-hmm. And Mary says to you, do you see that even saying that assumes her trials are greater than other people's? Her life might be more dramatic than some, but everyone has challenges to overcome at some point in their lives. She's not unique. She will fall, but she'll pick herself up again like she's done so many times before. It's up to her now to build herself. And it's that letting go.
Yeah.
That is so difficult, considering how we're brought up to be a mother. And it's those skills that you talk about. And I've heard you say being a skillful mother, mm-hmm. instead of trying to be a good or perfect mother, which doesn't exist.
Yeah, exactly. It's about trust. It boils down to trust. Trusting yourself, trusting your kid, you know, trusting that. And I will say that when my daughter was in active addiction, I didn't trust her at that point. There are times when it is really hard, and sometimes it doesn't always work out the way you'd like it to. And my heart goes out to people who really can't get beyond that active addiction part. But in my case, with my daughter, she was able to stick with recovery. She had ups and downs, but she was able to stick with recovery. And once I knew that she was out of that addictive brain thinking and all that, she was capable of staying in recovery on her own terms, in the way she needed to do that. And that's what you have to end up trusting, I think.
Well, this journey has taken you about 10 years from when you started journaling. Right. And I don't know if you have your book, but I was really taken by the epilogue that is written by your daughter, Olivia. When I finished reading my mother's memoir, I looked at her and said, "This is a love letter to me, isn't it?" And you both cried. And one of the other things that she says is, it also helped when mom took responsibility for her actions without blaming herself. It was hard enough trying to stay in control of my feelings. I couldn't handle worrying about hers too. What strengthened our relationship most is when she dropped the facade of trying to be a perfect mother and could be open and vulnerable with me. That inspired me to take responsibility for my attitude and actions. That's huge.
I was blown away. I mean, she wrote this and she handed it to me and I went, "Whoa, you nailed it. You have understood everything." So, and it was quite amazing. That was the best endorsement of this book I could have ever had.
Well, you've been on a journey. And our journeys continue, but this has been a journey that you are able to share with others in a way that is so powerful. I know that, you know, you write about female knowledge, the need for compassion, and the pain and beauty of difficult transitions. And through these stories, and as you said, you know, through communication, if we just if we give information and validate just one person,
right?
That's all it takes.
Exactly. And there's no reason for mom shaming and blaming. We as women, I think, can really lift each other up by being vulnerable and sharing our truth and having compassion for somebody who's going through a tough time. And realizing that when we share our stories, we're healing each other.
Most definitely. And I want to thank you so much for sharing your story with us here today. It's a story, as we've talked about, that needs to be heard, because as women, and I'll be repetitive as I've done before, as women, we often take the blame for so much and don't realize that we need to step back and let certain things happen and be able to trust ourselves.
Exactly. Well, it's been an honor. Thank you so much for having me.
Before you go, where can people find out more about you?
I guess the two places. One, really. My website, which is annbatchelder.com, which is annbatchelder.com. And there's a link to my book on Amazon, or you can just go to Amazon and find the book, Craving Spring.
Craving Spring, A Mother's Quest, A Daughter's Depression, and the Greek Myth That Brought Them Together. Anne, thank you so much for taking the time to be with me here today.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for joining me today. If you liked what you heard, please share it with another person you think would be interested. And if you haven't already, please subscribe.
This has been a Life of Prey production.